we were, and we discussed that the reason to introduce superspace is because we wanted to define a field theory in supersymmetry. And so now today we will start describing what a superfield is, knowing that superspace is. Okay. So to define superfields, to define a superfield, we have to recall a scalar field. A scalar field, I call it phi. So scalar field has two properties. First of all, is that it's a function of a of the coordinates x mu, but it also transforms accordingly under the Poincaré group. In the case of a scalar, the transformation is very simple because it's a scalar, it's invariant on the Lorentz transformations, but still, we have some information about how it transforms. So we have to find, we have to use these two properties of fields in standard space-time to be able to generalize this concept of field to a superfield. Okay. Okay. So this is a very simple thing. It just the field is just a function of the space-time coordinates. So now let's try to discuss these transformation properties. So, for instance, under translations, let's see how a field transforms, a scalar field, how it transforms. And then I will use some of the concepts we have used previously when we derived the supersymmetry algebra. First of all, phi, under translations, it will transform as an operator transforms under translations, because phi at the end will be a field, and you will see this is a field, it will be like an operator in Fock space in terms of creation and annihilation operators. So phi will transform as an operator. So phi transforms like e to the minus I a mu p mu times phi times e to the I a mu p mu, where p are the momenta, the four momenta that are the generators of translations. Okay, so this is the standard u dagger phi u transformation. And this is like an operator transforms. So P is the abstract representation of a linear momentum of P mu. Okay, but phi also is a function. It's a function of the x mu. So as a function, it transforms as in a particular representation of the translation group, in the sense also that. So also, as a function, phi, as a function of x, goes to e to the I a mu p mu. And notice that I'm drawing this p different from that one. This is a particular representation of p, and so I made it more sophisticated. And acting on phi. And this is just simply phi of x mu plus a mu. This is just a translation. I'm just translating the coordinates x to x plus a. So at the end, this what will this give us? This will give us a representation of the operator P acting on phi as a differential operator. Why? Because we can expand this in a Taylor series, and of course we can expand this in a Taylor series and compare. Take the linear term and then read what P is. And P is what we all know is essentially I times the gradient. Are everybody with me? You can see some confused faces. Yes? Okay. Very good. So let's see how this goes. Okay, so it's I A mu P mu equals to that. So let's try to find what the operator P mu is. So this will be, the first term will be the identity, so that will give us phi of x mu plus I A mu P mu acting on phi plus extra terms. Whereas this one will give us phi of x mu plus okay, so now we can, I'm doing something you have done already since before you knew how to ride a bike or something. So this is this tells us that P mu equals minus I d mu. Okay. I'm doing it carefully because this is precisely what I will represent for the supersymmetric case. Okay, so we know that this is the operator, P mu equals minus I d mu. And then now we can compare how the field transforms. We have two ways of transforming, this way and that way. And we can do that infinitesimally, as we did when we derived the algebra of supersymmetry. And we'll find a representation of what the transformation for a field is. Question, yes?
Transformation by definition of translations, we have phi transforms to phi of x plus a.
Yes.
But the step in between, that e to the I, a mu, p mu, where did you get that from?
Yes, this is the axiom of an element of the translation group, which is e to the I, a mu, p mu, acting on phi. So that's the representation.
The second line, you treat phi like a vector, and
The second line, I treat phi like a function. So that will be my space of functions. This operator p will act. P as an operator will act on my space of functions. So it will be e to the I a mu p mu acting on phi, and then I'll see what. Then I can read what p is as a generator of a translations group.
Okay, so. First and second line, phi is treated as a different object.
Exactly. In the same way as we did for the derivation of the supersymmetry algebra. In the first line, I treat phi as an operator. So it transforms u dagger or u inverse p u. Uh-huh. That's like a matrix or in general as an operator transforms. And the second one, it will be like a vector, as you will say. But in this case, it will be instead of being a vector, it's just a function of x. So it's a transformation. Yes, it's a big one. Okay, very good. This is important because that's what I'm going now. Okay, so then we have precisely the two expressions, and it's the same phi, so we can compare how phi transforms. So infinitesimally, what is it that we will get? The term in the first line, we can do what we did again in the in the derivation of the supersymmetry algebra, I will do it again. So it's, I will try to write that infinitesimally. So I will write 1 minus I A mu P mu acting on phi times 1 plus I A mu P mu equals, and then I use the transformation from the second line, and that will be 1 plus I A mu, and now the operator P mu that I know is I times the gradient acting on phi. And I will just use this because it's just infinitesimally. So I have to expand here and expand there. Okay, so as usual, the first term cancels. 1, phi, phi gives me the 1, phi. So that's okay. So, and then the other, the linear term will be p phi with a minus I, and then 5p with a plus I. Okay? So that will give me an I commutator of phi and a mu p mu. Okay? And on this side, I will have I A mu P mu phi. So that will, that tells us what the commutator is. So then we have that or phi A mu P mu equals P mu, I told you, was minus I D mu. So I have A mu d mu phi. Okay. So this, as usual, as I told you, remember when we derived the algebra of supersymmetry, this, the commutator tells us this operator acting on that equals to the translation. There's an I missing. I think you're right. Thank you. Okay. So I will try. This is just an exercise. So this essentially, this was telling you something trivial. So that p acting on phi gives you a translation of phi, d phi. Okay. So now I will do that for a superfield. So for a superfield, I have to follow the two steps. The first is a function in superspace, and second, that it transforms accordingly under the supersymmetry algebra. So for a superfield, so as I told you, I'll follow the two steps. The first step, and I will write this, I will write just the general, and I'll call scalar superfield. So for that, I need to write the expression. Sorry, I don't find my. It's a long expression that I want to write it as without the, all the factors correctly, just to well. X function of theta and theta bar. So what I will do now is expand this function in powers of theta and theta bar. So I will write, essentially I will fill up the blackboard, so be prepared for this. So the first term will not depend on theta and theta bar, so it will just be standard scalar field. That's what this superfield inherit the name scalar because of the first term in the expansion. It's just a standard scalar field.
This X is X mu?
Yes. But yes, but just I will just try not to fill up of the too many indices at the moment because we have too much to write. So take a deep breath and be prepared for this. Okay. So the next term is linear on theta. So when I write theta psi, that means I'm just contracting with the alpha indices. Okay, so you can see already the importance of superfield. This field here, this phi, which is the zero order expansion, is just a standard scalar field. Now this theta, the coefficient of theta, is a function of psi of x, I'm sorry. And then psi, because theta is anti-commuting, psi is also anti-commuting, so psi has to carry alpha indices, so this is spinor. Okay, so then you can, this is the idea of the superfield. Each of the components, or the terms in the expansions, will be different superfields, these different fields. So this will be a scalar, and this will be a spinor field, a fermion. Okay, plus. Then I have the term in theta bar, and that will be another field. Chi bar, this is a left-handed, this will be a right-handed. Plus, there is a term on theta, that will multiply another scalar field, M, plus theta bar, that will give you another scalar field. But you have extra pieces, which are theta, sigma mu, theta bar, and the coefficient that multiplies this, so this has one theta and one theta bar, the thing that multiplies this has to carry a mu index. So this will be like a vector field plus theta times theta bar lambda bar of x is another right-handed spinor plus theta bar times theta rho. And the very last term, which is very important, is theta bar times d of x. Okay? So I make the expansion of x as a of s as a function of x, theta and theta bar. So I make like a Taylor expansion in different powers of thetas. So independent of theta, linear in theta, quadratic, and so on. And this is the biggest power I can write. Higher powers of this will be zero. That's the beauty of the anti-commuting variables. You stop in a Taylor expansion up to finite order. Okay, so this tells us that the general scalar superfield will have as components many standard fields, transforming either scalars or spinors, even as a vector. Okay, so this is what generalizes this part, so we know now how the scalar superfield is, and now we have to do the second part, the how it transforms under the superconcavity algebra. Okay. Okay, so for transformation, so again, I will use the same argument that I used for the scalar field. I have to use it first transforming as a operator, and then how it transforms under a standard change in the superspace coordinates. So first, I will notice that I will try to use only the supersymmetry part of the transformation, not the rest of the not the rest of the Poincaré superalgebra, because we know already how the field transforms on the Poincaré superalgebra. So this will be as an operator and as a field, as a function of x theta and theta bar, this will go, I am very sorry. These thetas are not thetas, these are q's. Q's are the generators, sorry. Q's are the generators of a supersymmetry algebra. Okay. So an S of x theta and theta bar will go like E to the I epsilon. And then here I have to write, let me just write it as a more sophisticated Q. Something like that. Just to make it different from the standard Q. That this is a differential operator that we lacked on S. Okay. Yes, epsilon. The epsilon is a standard epsilon. Sorry, I've been so busy trying to make the q special that the epsilon became. Yes, it's epsilon. Epsilon q plus epsilon bar q bar. Okay? Yes, so it's the same thing that we were doing for the translations group, but now I'm doing for the supersymmetry part of the algebra. Okay? So and yes? Yes, this is the sophisticated Q. Yes. This one and this one. Because this will be the operators, the differential operators, like the I times the gradient that I use for the piece. And this is the abstract cube that I just, like the normal P that I was using there. Okay? So this is just following essentially the same steps there. Now, on the case of the scalar field, I used the equal sign over there, that e to the I a mu p mu acting on phi was phi of x plus a. So this is the thing I'm still missing here. I have to write this to be equals to s of a function of changing x, changing theta, and changing theta bar. Okay, and then from that I can read what the operators q will be as differential operators. Okay, so this will be, since I don't have space there, I will write it here. So this will be s of, and you will see that x mu will transform, has to transform, but we don't know exactly how. And so far, the best thing we can write is as follows. We have to write something that has the right transformation properties. So I'll put just an arbitrary constant, that as I usually put, and then perhaps epsilon sigma mu theta bar. Okay, so something that has to be linear on the thetas, but transforms with a mu index. So this is the only quantity that we can make. And C is the arbitrary coefficient that we have to fix. So that is how X has to transform by a transformation of the supersymmetry. Remember that if we make two supersymmetry transformations, we are left with X transforming by X plus a constant, or X plus something. So that means that X has to transform under the Qs. Okay, this cannot be zero. Okay, and then the theta just shifts in the same way as the X used to shift. So theta goes to theta plus epsilon, and theta bar goes to theta bar plus epsilon bar. Okay. So essentially, this should be how a super field transforms under this transformation, and the C is so far is arbitrary and need to be fixed. Okay?
Why don't we include sigma bar terms?
Yes, we will include that. Thank you very much. Plus conjugate, yes. Thank you very much. This is real. So this has to be real. Thank you very much. Yes.
Is it missing in the expansion
above? In what expansion?
On the general scalar superfield?
Yes.
You are writing one term with sigma mu, but no term with sigma bar. Is this on purpose?
Oh, no. That's okay, because that theta sigma mu is theta bar. It's just a number. It's just so you take the bar, it will give you the same thing.
Okay. Yes.
So that's okay. So yes. No, but here's important, because I have to add the complex conjugate here, because the coordinates, x mu coordinates are real. Yes. Thank you for pointing that out. So actually, let me just write this to be more explicit. X mu goes to x mu minus I c. Epsilon sigma mu theta bar plus I c star, and this looks like a theta sigma mu epsilon bar. If you do the transformation, remember that the sigmas are self-adjoint. Very good. Okay, so.
Should it be sigma bar?
Yeah, remember that the sigmas are self adjoint. So if you have something with alpha indices and something with alpha dot, so this one has the same structure, yeah. Okay, so now the step, sorry, we'll have time, yes, with the step to finish is that we have to. To do the infinitesimal version of that, and the infinitesimal version of that eventually will give us an a differential operator representing the q's and the q bars. And so if we make this expansion of this x mu and then compare the epsilon coefficient to the epsilon coefficient of q and so on, we can read what q and q bar are and then eventually fix the c's. So this will give us, so comparing, this will give us the following. I q alpha equals minus I c sigma mu alpha beta dot theta bar beta dot d mu plus d by d theta alpha. Okay. Without this term, this will be identical to what we had for the momenta. The momenta were shifting x to x plus a constant, and that will give you the gradient. But here we have this extra piece coming from changing of the x's. Well, we have to make that expansion. And then we'll have, so if we take out the q's, or the, we take out the I, let me just write it without the I, just to be minus I d by d theta alpha minus c sigma mu alpha beta dot theta bar beta dot d by d x mu. And similarly, we'll find q bar alpha dot to be I d by d theta bar alpha dot plus c star theta sigma mu alpha dot times d by dx mu, d mu. Okay. We have that, and we also had that p mu was equal to minus I d mu. So we have now, in principle, the representation of the supersymmetry generators with the translations as differential operators. But we still haven't done the whole thing because we haven't fixed the values of c's. How do we fix the value of c? Just impose that these objects, since they have to be representations of the supersymmetry algebra, they have to satisfy the algebra of n equals 1 supersymmetry. So to fix c, we have to impose that this q alpha q bar alpha dot equals the 2 times sigma mu alpha alpha dot times p mu. Okay, so what I'm writing for you is differential operators, as I promised, for all the generators, the q bar, say, and the p. And the only thing that we haven't fixed is the coefficient c, and the c, we can fix it by just imposing this the algebra. They have to be representations of the algebra, so this algebra, so n equals 1 to supersymmetry, has to be satisfied. And for that, you can plug this into this algebra. It's a standard exercise that you will do in the second example sheet. And then you will find out that the real part of C equals to 1. And then the imaginary part of C is arbitrary, so we'll choose it. We just choose it to be 0, so choose C equals to 1. Okay, so there's no other constraint for what the C is. Okay. I have to tell you that this is probably the simplest way of deriving this representation. You will see in books or in other books, for instance, the Weissenbacher book, that they derive this by using the definition of the of a superspace, remember, in terms of the coset of the super Poincaré group, modeled out by the Lorentz group. And so use the representative of the coset and try to use the algebra of that. And from that you can read up what the representation for Qs and Q bars should be. I found that a bit more complicated to do, at least in the lecture, so I chose this derivation, which I think is simpler. Okay, so now we have that. We have what we wanted. We have that the fields, we know how they transform as functions. I mean, we know that they are functions of a superspace, and they transform on the Poincaré according to this differential operators Q and Q bar. Still, we have to find the equivalent of this transformation, that the commutator equals to that. Okay, so that is straightforward, and I will do it now. Any questions so far? Sorry?
Could you say something about the transformation on the Lorentz boosts? Because for a usual scalar it's true, but in this case, I don't know.
Yes. Since this is a scalar, in that sense, it will be, you can have another superfield that will carry indices. So instead of S of X theta theta bar, you have an S alpha, for instance, or S, and that will transform on the Lorentz group as a spinor or so. Okay? And that's why the first component of the superfield tells you how to name the superfield. So in this case, it will be scalar. But in principle, you can have, say, superfield, and we will see in the next couple of weeks, superfields that will be, say, W alpha. So it will not be a scalar, but then you will know how it will transform. Depending according to the index, it will transform as a spinor or any other quantity that transforms under the Lorentz group. So that is taken care of by the index. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, the question is whether the things that you included there, for example, that vector field, whether they transform them as vectors.
Yes, in this, yes. Here, you mean this? Yes. You see, here, since these are standard fields, so they will transform as standard vector fields. Okay. But what I was saying is that, for instance, this is because we started with a superfield having no Lorentz indices. So then, this is how you will write it. If you start with a superfield that carries some Lorentz indices, then the whole contraction here will be different, and then you will generate other kind of fields. And then, depending on the index structure, it will tell, it will be scalars or vectors or spinors and so on. That's it. Okay. Good. So I still owe you that the generalization of that equation. And again, so this, the step is the same as always. We do the infinitesimal version of each of the two transformations and then read. Okay? The one upstairs in the first line, the infinitesimal version will give us the commutator as usual. And on the second line, that will give us the right-hand side how the operator acts as a differential operator. Okay, so fine. I S epsilon Q plus epsilon bar Q bar equals I epsilon Q plus epsilon bar Q bar acting on S. Okay, so that's the standard thing. This is the commutator acting on S. How it tells you how the corresponding representation of S is. In this case, it's a representation as a field, so this will be a differential operator. Okay, so this defines what supersymmetry transformation is. Okay? Okay, so to finish, we have 10 more minutes. So we have 10 minutes to fill up the blackboard of a lot of equations. So, okay. Because now, what is it that we have to do? We have to take this action acting on S. This action is defined by those differential operators acting on S, but S is all this. Okay? So this will tell us, all this will give us delta S. This is how S transforms on the supersymmetry. So S transforms on the supersymmetry in this way and as a differential operator in this way. And so this will tell us how each of the components of the superfield transform. Okay, so I had to tell you how delta phi is, what delta psi is, delta chi bar is, and so on, all the way to delta d. So they all will transform as combinations of the other ones, and that's why it will be a superfield. Okay, so you're ready? So this implies this is a lot of fun, actually. Okay, so this implies that delta phi equals epsilon psi plus epsilon bar psi bar. Okay, and this is the most explicit way of saying that supersymmetry takes a boson and gives you a fermion. So you have delta of a scalar gives you fermions. Okay, so that's. And how do you get that? By acting on this from these differential operators on S. Okay. Okay. So and then delta psi will be equal to 2 epsilon m plus sigma mu epsilon I d mu phi plus v mu. It's epsilon bar. Excuse me? Where does the psi bar come from this equation? Here. Aha, let me just see it. The psi bar has to come, let me see.
You call it psi bar. Okay.
Oh. Sorry. Yes, you're right. I know what you mean, yes. Sorry, yes, thank you very much. Yes, that's the problem. There are so many equations. 2 epsilon n plus sigma mu epsilon bar I d phi v mu phi plus v mu. Yes, very good. So now delta chi bar equals 2 epsilon bar n principle is minus epsilon sigma mu I d mu phi minus d mu. We have phi psi chi bar delta n epsilon bar lambda bar minus I over 2 d mu psi sigma mu epsilon bar delta n epsilon rho plus I over 2 delta v mu equals, this is the longest, epsilon sigma mu lambda bar plus rho sigma mu epsilon bar plus I over 2 v mu psi sigma mu sigma bar nu epsilon minus epsilon bar sigma bar nu sigma mu d mu chi bar. Then delta lambda bar to epsilon bar d plus I over 2 then delta rho. We're almost there. Two more and we're done. Okay, so it's 2 epsilon d last one okay so this is telling you how different component fields transform under supersymmetry. As I told you, scalar goes to fermion, fermion goes to scalars. Again, the fermion goes to scalars here, and so on. The vector goes to fermions, etc. So you have how particles of different spins transform into each other. It's always related by spin 1/2. The only thing this is, if you wonder how to derive this, so I told you, you will get it by applying the differential operators on the general superfield, and that will be, as you can have, you may have guessed already, it will be part of the example sheet number 2. Okay, so you will see it in full glory, all the details about the derivation of this. If you don't do it, Joe Conlon will do it for you. And so this is good to have because this is as complicated as it can get in this kind of calculations. You will get very familiar with all the properties of this two component fermions and so on. Before finishing, because we ran out of time, I would like to make an observation that it will be very important for the rest of the course is that this, all the fields are transforming among each other. But look at D. D is the last one. It's the last one and transforms as the total derivative of something. So this is very important. So important. delta D is a total derivative. So something you will have to keep in mind, and that we will use in the next few lectures. So start getting familiar with it. So that's the important detail that you have to know, besides the fact that you can see now explicitly how scalars transform to fermions and fermions to scalars and so on. Yes. Yes, I mean, but we're defining it infinitesimally. Infinitesimally, we'll get that. Right? So we'll get a scalar goes to a fermion. And that's everything we have to say. Sorry.
He's saying that there's only a small increment that is a spinner part.
Yes, and of course, this is the algebra. That's what you're asking. Yes, this is just the algebra. So we're not asking for more than that. So on the supersymmetry algebra, we get this. You want to exponentiate it, you can exponentiate it. That's what you want to say. But this is just infinitesimal. Yeah.